Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
The identity on this vehicle was changed at one point. We're seeing it exploding. The revin game is a massive problem right now as well. We're not going to rest our way out of this issue.
The fight against surging auto thefts in Canada has had a big focus on exports. Stolen cars and trucks slipping through ports and shipped overseas. But CBC News is learning there are also problems in our own backyard and driveways. More and more stolen vehicles that aren't leaving the country, and their new owners have no idea. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner. It is Wednesday, April 24th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern. Also on the podcast,
you can see people using drugs quite openly everywhere.
Transit specifically.
You just see it a lot everywhere.
Calls for a 180 1 year after BC decriminalized small amounts of drugs. It's supposed to help the province's deadly drug crisis, but some municipal leaders say it's just getting worse. The United States has finally approved its contentious and expensive military aid bill. New weapons could arrive in Ukraine before the end of the night. And the clock is now ticking for TikTok. Washington is giving its Chinese owners a deadline to sell the app or risk getting banned. It's common practice in any conflict, adapting to your enemy's tactics. As Canadian police have focused their fight against auto theft on international exporters, CBC News is learning criminals are shifting their attention to the domestic market. It involves sophisticated fraud work and a loophole in the way vehicles are registered. David Common went behind the scenes with detectives for this exclusive look at a troubling new trend.
Speeds about, they're going about 120.
In Peel, just west of Toronto, undercover officers are discreetly following a suspect.
So that's them right there.
The takedown nets a man they say reflects a growing trend in auto theft, re-vinning, where a vehicle's unique registration number is copied and used on a similar stolen vehicle.
79, all is good. Hold for custody.
Police allege the man arrested has been selling stolen cars, his purported customers bragging about their new vehicles on social media accounts he allegedly controls.
Royal in the building. Man, got me this new Jetta. I'm pretty stoked.
Vehicles which may be stolen and re-vinned.
Got my new SUV fully loaded. Tints, lights, rims, insides clean. Everything's legit.
Often everything isn't legit, as Derek Crocker of Toronto discovered when he bought a used pickup truck at a dealership.
It was stolen. And the whole reason you buy it from dealership is so you don't have to worry about dealing with that sort of thing, right?
After an accident, the body shop used the VIN sticker located on the truck's dash to order replacement parts. But oddly, those parts didn't fit, prompting Crocker to turn detective.
So I Googled the VIN number that was on my truck, and I found a truck for sale in Utah.
Turns out the VIN on his own truck had been replaced by criminals. The truck then sold to the dealership that Derek bought from.
It was crazy. I would never expect that.
Police seized the vehicle, and Crocker's insurance wouldn't cover it because the truck was stolen. He was eventually able to recover his money from the dealership.
So these are a bunch of stolen recovered vehicles that we've pulled off the road.
Peel Police Detective Sergeant Greg O'Connor shows us high-end vehicles which have been re-vinned.
Well, close to $1 million worth of cars.
If you're wondering how two cars with the same supposedly unique number can be registered, it's because provincial registration databases don't talk to one another. And that's a major weakness being exploited now by organized crime, says Peel Deputy Chief Nick Milinovich.
The reality is this is a national issue.
And that's why a national registry that moves itself beyond any sort of provincial jurisdiction is important in all capacities.
It's not just...
He just closed the trunk of the SUV and now back in the house.
Even with millions of dollars now pouring into auto theft investigations, the value of cars being stolen continues to climb. More than $1 billion in Ontario alone last year. Multiple police sources warn that auto theft is growing so fast it could overtake illicit drugs as organized crime's most lucrative pursuit. David Common, CBC News, Mississauga, Ontario.
Pressure is mounting on the BC government to scrap its three-year-long pilot drug decriminalization program. It was introduced just a year ago. Now, prominent local politicians from a number of cities are urging the province to abandon it. The policy has supporters, but as Tanya Fletcher reports, the premier admits he's looking at his options.
I do see it a lot. It's definitely depressing. I wish they weren't stuck in the position that they were in.
On the streets of downtown Vancouver, signs of drug use are in plain sight.
But like you could see people using drugs quite openly everywhere, transit specifically.
And despite a slew of government attempts to address the broader drug crisis, many say they're not working.
I don't know if I'd say it's getting better. I would say it's like the same, honestly. Yeah. Like you just see it a lot everywhere.
One of BC's measures arrived just over a year ago in the form of decriminalization. Under a Health Canada exemption, adults are allowed to possess small amounts of illicit drugs for personal use. But now three city councillors from three different cities are pleading with the province to scrap it.
Decriminalization of drugs clearly is not working.
Surrey City Councillor Linda Annis calls it a failed experiment.
We shouldn't be allowing people to use drugs, and if they're caught, they should be given the option to either, you know, do their time or seek treatment.
They say since decriminalization, there's been a rise in street disorder, crime, and drug paraphernalia out in the open. And police say their officers have struggled to manage public drug use in places like parks, playgrounds, and beaches.
We are looking at options.
Premier David Eby is now acknowledging those public safety problems and hinting change may come.
How can we save more lives and how can we ensure that people feel safe in our community? That work is underway and continuing, and we're going to have more to say about that soon.
But some experts caution what's happening on the streets is much more complex than decriminalization alone. Cora DeBeck is a professor of public policy at Simon Fraser University, specializing in substance use.
The underlying cause of what's really driving that is the toxic supply of drugs, the unregulated supply of drugs, homelessness, economic insecurity, all of these social factors that are coming to a head, and that's what's driving the disorder.
BC isn't alone in trying to balance harm reduction and public safety.
Narcan, 4 milligrams in the left nostril.
Oregon was the first U.S. state to decriminalize small amounts of hard drugs. But last month, with polls showing growing public backlash, that law was rolled back. Here, however, drug user advocates like Guy Felicella say the province just needs more time.
It's a 3-year pilot project for a reason, and they haven't given it the full amount of time to actually look at to say if it's working or if it's not working.
This all comes with both a federal and a provincial election on the horizon as politicians parse whether public opinion will sway public policy. Tanya Fletcher, CBC News, Vancouver.
The leader of the Conservative Party faces questions tonight about comments he made while meeting with protesters at a carbon tax protest camp on the New Brunswick-Nova Scotia border. As Tom Perry tells us, Pierre Poilievre took the opportunity to take aim at Prime Minister Justin Trudeau using some very blunt language.
So I'm the guy who's going to axe the tax.
Well, let's hope so.
Video shot by protesters and shared on social media shows their unexpected guest, Pierre Poilievre, who says he was just driving by and stopped to offer encouragement to demonstrators who've been camped out for more than 3 weeks.
You sleep back there. That's your little dog.
That's my little dog.
A protest site that includes a large white trailer, a car with Make Canada Great Again scrawled on the rear window, Canadian flags with Axe the Tax written on them, and a banner featuring a slur aimed at the Prime Minister that translates politely to F. Trudeau.
Everything he said was bullshit,
mm-hmm.
top to bottom.
Poilievre was slightly less vulgar, but no less direct, as he attacked the Prime Minister in front of protesters, at least some of whom were active in the convoy movement, which Poilievre also supported.
Every politician
has to make choices about what kind of leader they want to be.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau today fired back, accusing Poilievre of launching personal attacks and welcoming the support of extremists, singling out notorious American media personality Alex Jones, who recently endorsed Poilievre, calling him the real deal.
Alex Jones is a proven liar and conspiracy theorist who has to pay millions, hundreds of millions of dollars because he lied about the Sandy Hook killing that killed 20 little kids.
Trudeau says Poilievre has yet to reject that endorsement. In a statement, a spokesperson for the conservative leader repeated Poilievre does not follow Jones or listen to what he has to say, adding if the prime minister is concerned about extremism, he should look at parades on Canadian streets openly celebrating Hamas's slaughter of Jews on October 7th. It is a nasty and bitter political fight. And right now, David Coletto of Abacus Data doesn't see the prime minister's jabs at Poilievre doing much damage.
But that doesn't mean over time does the accumulation of all of these evidence points lead to someone maybe saying, I'm uncomfortable with him being the prime minister of Canada.
Coletto says with polls consistently showing the Conservatives with a wide lead, the risk for Poilievre is feeling overconfident. He says the conservative leader didn't need to visit a protest camp to make a point about carbon pricing, though there is a danger in being seen as getting too cozy with any movement that some voters may view as extreme. Tom Perry, CBC News, Ottawa.
Coming up on the podcast, more weapons on their way to Ukraine after a massive U.S. aid package passes Congress. And TikTok gets a final warning. Lose your Chinese investment or you're blocked in the U.S. Plus, a parade rehearsal turned into a terrifying stampede through downtown London. Police tangled with demonstrators in Texas and California as protests grew at several campuses across the U.S. Protesters are demanding their schools stop doing business with Israel or investing in companies that support the war in Gaza. Police and state troopers formed a line to prevent students at the University of Texas from marching through campus. Several people were detained. Police at the University of Southern California removed several tents, then got into a tugging match with protesters before falling back. Students set up encampments at Harvard as well. In Gaza, Israel intensified its bombing campaign after weeks of relative calm. The renewed offensive comes as international pressure mounts to investigate an alleged mass grave outside a hospital in Khan Yunis. Sasha Petrasek reports.
Next to Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza, bulldozers dig in to the dusty ground. Volunteers with shovels follow, scraping away at buried plastic body bags. Seen in video shot for CBC News. The hospital was recently abandoned by Israeli troops after they said they'd finished looking for Hamas fighters there. Now, officials with the Hamas-run health ministry say they've uncovered a mass grave. We've been digging for 5 days and we've found 320 bodies, says Mohammed Al-Mugher, an official with local civil defense. He says many of them had their hands tied, some are missing heads. CBC was not able to confirm those details. Israel denies it was responsible for the grave, calling the allegations baseless, though it does say soldiers may have dug up some bodies looking for missing hostages. Washington wants to know more, says National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. Well,
those reports were deeply disturbing. We have been in touch at multiple levels with the Israeli government. We want answers. We want to understand exactly what happened.
Calling it horrifying, the UN Office for Human Rights is also pushing for an inquiry, says spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani.
We are stressing the need for international investigations. There's a history here of impunity for gross violations.
This comes as Israel intensifies airstrikes across the south of Gaza and plans a ground operation. Spokesman David Mensah says too many Hamas fighters remain in Rafah.
The four battalions which remain in Rafah cannot be shielded from Israel. They will be attacked.
U.S. President Joe Biden says he doesn't support such an operation because of the risk of too many civilian casualties. But he does back Israel, he said, as he signed a bill that will deliver $15 billion in military help.
The security of Israel is critical. It will always make sure that Israel has what it needs to defend itself against Iran and terrorists it supports.
Biden says the U.S. bill also sets aside $1 billion for aid to Palestinians. The U.S. has also been working to find and release Israeli-American Hirsch Goldberg Pollan, who was injured when kidnapped by Hamas militants on October 7th. Today, Hamas released a video to show he is still alive. Comfort to his father, John Pollan.
We're relieved to see him alive, but we are also concerned about his health and well-being.
Outside the Nasser Hospital, the row of bodies laid out in the sun grows, some with flowers laid on top. Nesmia Abu Asr says she hopes one of them is her husband, among the thousands of Palestinians still missing in Gaza and presumed dead. Sasha Petrosik, CBC News, Washington.
U.S. President Joe Biden has signed a $95 billion bill to deliver military aid to some of the country's allies. As we've heard, Israel is getting a chunk, so is Taiwan. But most aid, nearly $61 billion worth, is going to Ukraine. It ends a months-long congressional standoff that left Ukrainian forces running out of weapons as Russia advanced. The CBC's Alex Panetta joins us from Washington. Alex, what exactly did this legislation do?
It's a sprawling bill, but here is the top line. After 6 months of stagnation, of limbo, Ukraine is getting rearmed. This keeps Ukraine supplied for the rest of this year. And President Joe Biden wasted no time signing the bill into law. It passed Congress last night, and he signed it this morning. He called it a good day for America, a good day for Europe, and a good day for world peace.
It's going to make America safer. It's going to make the world safer. And it continues America's leadership in the world, and everyone knows it.
It took 1 minute, literally 1 minute, to start getting the weapons flowing. After signing the new law, the president immediately approved a new weapons package to Kyiv. Ukraine is getting new artillery, short-range rockets, air defense interceptors, armored vehicles, and crucially, long-range missiles designed to strike Russian positions deep behind the front lines. The U.S. is warning Ukraine about where to use these weapons, more precisely, but where not to use them. It's demanded no strikes on Russian territory.
So, Alex, what difference will this make on the ground, in the air, in the Ukraine-Russian war?
So the assessment of military analysts here in Washington is that for now, at least, it protects a stalemate. That this won't work miracles. What it's designed to do, they say, is to halt Russian advances, maybe lead to peace talks, and to prevent a catastrophic conclusion to this war for Ukraine. It's a decidedly modest goal. But the White House says we're now stuck with the consequences of 6 months of delay in Congress from Republicans. And when the House and Senate were finally allowed to vote on this package these last few days, it passed with flying colors, with 80% of the vote. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says these weapons would have made a bigger difference 6 months ago.
And the consequences of the delay have been felt in Ukraine. Over the past 6 months, Ukraine has had to ration ammunition. And that has resulted in the loss of some territory in the east, including the city of Avdiivka. And they are still under severe pressure on the battlefield. And it is certainly possible that Russia could make additional tactical gains in the coming weeks.
He insists Ukraine can still reconquer its lost territory, just not immediately. And that's the criticism of this bill from the right, that the U.S. won't save Ukraine, that Russia still enjoys a big edge in artillery, and that won't change. They fret that the United States is in no position to help win this war, that it has too much debt and too little artillery.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
The CBC's Alex Panetta tonight in Washington. Entwined in that same bill, an ultimatum to the social media platform TikTok. Find new ownership or else. TikTok faces a nationwide ban if the Beijing-based owner ByteDance doesn't divest. U.S. lawmakers say it poses a security threat. Cameron McIntosh has more.
Things girls do when they don't like you.
Sarah Lauren didn't set out to be an influencer, but turns out she's got influence.
Number one is when they invite you to group activities.
A Canadian living in New York, her job in the fashion industry got her posting. about relationships.
My dating life isn't the best, isn't the easiest, so I tell my followers to learn from my mistakes.
Now, with 741,000 followers, she's making more money than her day job.
I have all these brand deals set up. I have all these things that's kind of integrated into my life. It's a way of income.
So the prospect of a ban?
It's terrifying because it's helpless.
A sharing app for short videos, TikTok has over a billion users. An addictive algorithm that keeps users swiping through content.
Eyes have it, the amendments are adopted.
A sweeping bill just signed into law by President Biden takes aim at TikTok's partial Chinese ownership, requiring its parent ByteDance to sell within a year or be banned in the U.S. The vice president, Kamala Harris, insists it's all about data security.
We're not trying to ban TikTok. We're basically saying we got to pay attention to who the owner of TikTok is and pay attention to what that presents in terms of national security issues.
Hi, everyone. It's Sho here.
ByteDance CEO Sho Chew refutes that. In a post, he accused the government of bending to American social media giants.
This bill gives more power to a handful of other social media companies.
Either way, TikTok is becoming a bigger and bigger player.
We're seeing a bipolar world where China is exerting its influence.
Law and technology expert Daniel Chai says this is about politics.
This has geopolitical implications as well in terms of the influence of these apps on culture, politics, how people think.
Abani says could face years in court. TikTok is banned on Canadian government phones. But the Prime Minister, who, like President Biden, has an official TikTok account, won't say if Canada will follow suit.
The security, the privacy, and the data protection of Canadians needs to be a first priority for us.
If sold, some estimates value TikTok at over $80 billion. In the turbulent world of social media,
number two,
all of this has influencer Sarah Lauren thinking about diversifying.
I'm going to try to post more on other social medias.
Her now uneasy relationship with TikTok, perhaps fodder for a future relationship video. Cameron McIntosh, CBC News, Winnipeg.
Five runaway horses galloping at full speed. Not a usual sight in central London, but that was the scene during rush hour this morning. During a military exercise, the animals bucked their riders and bolted. As Margaret Evans tells us, the chaotic incident had members of the public trying to wrangle the distressed animals.
Pounding hooves and a sight so surreal it looked like a dream, and a scary one at that. Two riderless horses, one white, one black, running full tilt into morning traffic. Think Alex Colville's famous painting of a horse running towards an oncoming train, and then transpose it to central London, complete with double-decker buses and black cabs, one of the horses banging into a taxi. Their panicked run was captured by startled pedestrians and motorists. Sean is a taxi driver.
Three horses went past me at full gallop without riders, which obviously was quite extraordinary. So nudged out a little bit more to check it was safe to pull out. And then another horse came around the corner with a rider on it and just missed my cab.
More than one vehicle was damaged, including a bus with its windows shattered. The broken glass, perhaps why one of the horses appeared to be bleeding heavily. The red, a stark contrast against its white coat. All five belonged to the Household Cavalry, often seen taking part in royal pageants and military parades. They were apparently spooked by noise at a building site near Buckingham Palace, throwing their riders. Three of the riders and a cyclist were injured and taken to hospital. These two young women, Alicia and Lauren, saw one of the horses after it was caught and held near busy Victoria Station.
Quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
In central London, to see a horse with no rider just being led, we thought, what's going on there?
Yeah,
it's just quite confusing.
The military says all five horses were found and taken for veterinary care. One witness's video showed members of the public apparently calming a horse. Two others ran quite a long route, finally recovered in East London, a fair distance from Buckingham Palace. Margaret Evans, CBC News, London.
And finally, this last story is meant to inspire those of you who may have a hidden talent but think it's a bit weird, a little too niche to put on display. Well, you should know there's a real event where people proudly and loudly pretend to be seagulls. This is the European Gull Screeching Championship held over the weekend in Belgium. Competitors are judged by a panel of seagull experts, points awarded for quality of the screech and body movement. This year, the standout performance was from one of the youngest participants, 9-year-old Cooper Wallace from Chesterfield, England. What you're about to hear is the sound of a near-perfect gull screeching score.
3, 2, 1.
Wallace won the kids' competition and had the highest score of the entire event. His parents say they were a little annoyed when the seagull screeching started at home, but decided to take him to the competition after realizing he was actually good at it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Your World Tonight for April 24th. I'm Susan Bonner. Talk to you again.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.